Hello, my name is Paul Kearney, and I am a professor of politics and public policy at the University of Stirling. Almost forgot my name there. This is chapter one, introduction, and it's called New Policy Analysis for the Real World. Now, that's largely because I wanted to put that in there somewhere, because there's a kind of classic book when I was an undergraduate and someone I worked for a while. It was called Policy Analysis for the Real World. Okay, and it always seemed like they've got the best title. Okay, so the introduction briefly describes what the aim of the book is. And it starts by saying, trying to define policy analysis. And I think it's no more than the identification of a policy problem and of policy solutions. You know, I think it's one of the easiest things to sum up. I mean, it's hard to go from there, but that's pretty much what it is. You're trying to identify what policy problems exist and what you can do about them, often for a client. You know, the classic texts talk about, solve problems for your client. Now, as described, it is both descriptive and prescriptive. We're using research and empirical information for normative purposes. Now, there are classic texts that I'll talk about throughout the course, and there are classic methods like cost-benefit analysis. However, part of the point of the book is that new texts in the study of policy analysts suggest that they're describing something new, and that is sort of two main elements. The first is there's a new policy-making environment. So studies of policy analysts suggest that their number, their role, their required skills and their status has changed profoundly over several decades. Now, a lot of this novelty is captured by studies of policymaking, as in policy process, theories and concepts. And ideally, we should follow Laswell's famous aim to combine policy analysis and policymaking research, otherwise described as the analysis for policy informed by the analysis of policy. However, if you study this for any length of time, you'll see there's quite a gulf between those two concerns. You often study those in different books or different modules. And you can go through your life as a policy analyst, not reading policy theories or studying policy theories without really being engaged in the kind of practical normative side of policymaking. So there's a lot more work to be done to help students of policy analysis with a practical focus learn from policymaking research, which is theoretical, empirical, with a potential practical focus. So the first purpose of the book is to explore how to incorporate policy theory insights in a straightforward way, focusing on two main elements. The first I would call policymaking psychology. So there's a simple insight that people combine cognition and emotion to understand information. So we have to incorporate that in the way we communicate policy analysis. The second is policymaking complexity. So policymakers operate in an environment over which no one has full knowledge or control. So we have to incorporate the sense that we can't just say, do this because we want it to happen. We really have to tie what we want them to do to an analysis of what they actually do in a policy process. What is their capacity and what are their limits? Now, the second aspect of the book is a new focus on the normative role. So traditionally, I mean, I'm kind of providing some kind of caricature here a little bit, but policy analysis is described almost as a noble technocratic way to aid policy. You know, use policy analysis methods to help policymakers enhance human dignity, which sounds excellent. But now there's much more of a focus on well-established, but often ignored work on the contestation and the politics of knowledge production. So the second purpose of the book is to explore how to incorporate insights from studies of power, co-production, feminism, racism, and decolonization to reconsider what is good policy analysis and what makes policy relevant knowledge. Now, I won't claim to be an expert or speaking on behalf of those texts, but I would like to introduce them to you and to show you how relevant they are to policy analysis, even when they never really engage with policy analysis texts. And I think the main take-home message is that if you see people describing policy analysis as a largely technical exercise done by objective or dispassionate people, that itself is an exercise of power to downplay the politics of knowledge production and use. And the alternative is to reflect on whose policy relevant knowledge counts and whose knowledge should count. Okay, so in terms of the structure of the book, I've divided it into two parts. Part one is a notional conversation between policy analysis texts, policy theories, and critical policy analysis. And it's five main parts then. So first we'll get into what's the classic five-step model of how to do policy analysis. Then we ask you what has changed and why do we need new policy analysis? In particular, what insights from policy process research do analysts need to learn? And then what insights from wider studies of power, knowledge, politics, and policy do policy analysis needs to consider? And then finally, in that section, I'll ask, how have these policy analysis texts incorporated these insights so far? So particularly the new editions of the new text, they actually engage very heavily with these kinds of issues, so I'm not describing them as somehow deficient in that sense. Part two goes further, uses this foundation to explore a series of themes relevant to doing policy analysis and reflecting on that process. Okay, so the first one is comparing what you need as a policy analyst with policy making reality. Now, I would say that most five-step guides, they relate mostly to what analysts need to do. Let's call those functional requirements. This is what they need to do and what they require of policymaking. Now, that's very different from the study of actual policymaking. What you need is often not what you can do. So that's where policy concepts and theories are handy because they identify bounded rationality, the limits to the processing of information, and the limits to the understanding and control of policymakers within policy processes. And then that section or chapter asks us to reflect on, if you take these insights seriously, there is not one single all-powerful center processing all information, then who actually are you speaking to? Who's your audience when you define problems and propose solutions? And what can you realistically expect them to do with your solutions? The next section is about who should be involved. And so if we kind of reconsider that idea that policy analysis is a political act to decide who should be involved in the policy process and whose knowledge counts. So I identify this kind of notional distinction between two different stories or visions of policy analysis. One is often called evidence-based policymaking, which I think requires a focus on a relatively small group of experts providing research directly to policymakers and prioritizing that research and policy choices. The second story is a more co-produced exercise which focuses much more on deliberation and widespread inclusion from people who are stakeholders or participants, service users, or just anyone who is affected by policy or has something to say that would help shape it. And those are two very different concerns. And they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, but it's worth spending some time thinking about what we think policy analysis is and who should be involved and who should not. Now that informs the next section, which is what is your role as a policy analyst? And there's a series of questions there on what to reflect. Who should decide how to frame and solve policy problems? How pragmatic should you be when you propose policy change in a complex system? And to what extent is your success of your analysis dependent on producing new information and advice or generating inclusion among a large group of people, rather than just focusing on outcomes? And this section identifies a series of different policy analysis archetypes, but really groups them into two different approaches. One is the classic pragmatic, professional, client-oriented policy analyst that sees it as art and craft and the art of the possible and is relatively conservative or realistic, however you want to describe it. And the second I would describe as a more questioning, storytelling, decolonizing analyst that challenges or seeks to challenge inequalities of power and seeks to use policy-relevant knowledge and policy analysis to change things. Okay, so to not be pragmatic or to reject, that kind of false sense of realism. We then move on to this idea of a policy entrepreneur. So that's quite a popular notion in policy studies and in policy analysis. The idea that you can identify exceptional individuals who have the tenacity and knowledge and skills and networks to make major changes. And so Michael Mintram is a great exponent of that kind of study, and he identifies, you know, the attributes, skills and strategies for entrepreneurships. But really, I think a lot of the study of policymaking suggests that most policy actors, like entrepreneurs, fail. You know, we tend to focus on the successful ones, but, you know, if you look at everyone, most people are not having that success. And then I would say it's their environments that explain their success more than their strategies. So that, you know, lots of different people could use exactly the same strategy but fail in different environments. And relatively few people have the power or the opportunity to become entrepreneurs. So we can talk about that in terms of, you know, the wider question of inequalities of power within policy analysis. Then one of my favourite topics, policy analysis as systems thinking. Now again, that is another popular term which can be useful to policy analysis, you know, which is just essentially saying, you know, let's not be too narrow-minded or reductive about policy analysis. Let's think of it as a system and what we how everything connects to each other. Now, the only, there are a couple of problems that I talk about. One is that if you try and pin down what people mean by system thinking, it's very difficult. And, you know, just to be a little bit facetious, in that chapter I've come up with 11 different meanings that people use and to compare them. And just to show you that the term system thinking is not particularly useful unless you find out what it means. And the other problem is that some people are talking about using it to change the world. Other people are using it to say that individuals have a minimal impact on complex systems. So system thinking, because it can essentially be, you can have a maximal impact or you will have a minimal impact. So we really need to sort out what people mean there. So finally then, the final section asks how much impact you can expect from your analysis and how far you would go to secure it. And I go into a little bit the relationship between studies of policy analysis and studies of academic impact. So I think the difference is policy analysis, I think, expect more of an impact than academic researchers did. And maybe they would be willing to go much further than academics to get what they want. So just explore that kind of thing and introduce what we call a ladder of ethical engagement. And as a series of steps that you can ask yourself about how far you're willing to go to engage in politics and policymaking to get what you want from policy analysis. Okay, so overall, the book then helps us reflect on, you know, what can the study of policy analysis tell us about policymaking, and what can studies of policymaking tell budding policy analysts about the nature of their task and how it relates to their policymaking environment. You may as well go into this with your eyes wide open rather than being too, you know, having too high expectations. And then it reflects a little bit on what is an ethical approach to policy analysis and the pursuit of human dignity, given that there are high levels of inequalities and marginalization in political systems, and policy analysts have high potential to reinforce those inequalities rather than help solve them. Okay, thank you.